Okay, well, welcome to this class, the Curriculum Buffet. I don't know if I have feel very adequate standing up here. I mean, I'm sure Jonathan or some other people would have be better able to do this than what I am. But a little bit of my story. Whenever I was growing up, I grew up in school and we used Rod Staff curriculum. That's what we knew. We used a little bit of CLE. My family went to these homeschool conventions and we sold CLE, and I listened to my dad sell Rod and Staff, and he liked to talk about how that the material sells itself. You just be there and these customers walk up and talk about it, like how great this stuff is, and they sell it to other people. And anyway, I kind of got the idea that Rod and Staff is, well, why would you use anything else? I mean, this is great. So time went on, and I got on the school board, and hey, there's more than Rod and Staff. There's other curriculum providers as well, and so I learned some things. But when I was on the board, we were blessed with some very excellent teachers. And the problem with an excellent teacher is that they take care of some things that the school board doesn't have to take care of. And so, you know, we had our lessons all lined out, our curriculum all lined out, and so we were just kind of on autopilot. Well, day came when the teacher was sick, whatever happened, and the teacher wasn't coming back. And so I remember sitting there, and this teacher was saying, okay, this is what we're doing this grade, this is what we're doing this grade, this is what we're doing this grade. And I'm like, whoa, I've got to take care of this. I've got to make sure this gets carried on for the further years, which was a good wake-up call, and I think that was appropriate. I think it's good for the school board to have to deal with some of that. So that's some of how I got to that. And then further on in our life, then we had the opportunity to go to these homeschool conventions ourselves and talk to people and interact with people and see all these other vendors, which was great. I still enjoy that. So what are we looking at? The curriculum buffet, the curriculum, when we look at our school and the things that we're teaching, the course of study provided by the school, all the parts that are a part of instructing the children. And this covers a lot of different things when it comes to curriculum, and it's not just the textbooks, but that's where I want to focus on my attention this morning, is just on the textbooks. As a school board, that we need to be thinking about more than just the textbooks. You know, what happens out in the playground? What happens after school? More than that. The curriculum buffet. I like that word, that buffet. Whenever me and my family go out, we're traveling, we're coming back from a convention, a buffet is something that I like to stop at. Because you walk in the restaurant, pay your dues or whatever, and there it's already there. You don't have to wait. You can go. And one of the neat things is you get a little of this and a little of that, a little of the next thing. When we go to the buffet, my plate looks different than my wife's. You know, she eats different than what I do. Okay, now, if you're at a school board meeting and you're talking about what curriculum to use, you know, and okay, this is what I think we ought to use, I think it's appropriate, I think it's okay for the school board to say, well, hey, I like this curriculum, I like that curriculum, for this reason or that reason. You know, it might be a challenge if we went to the restaurant and I filled my wife's plate, it might be a challenge for her to get it all down. So I think that it's okay to have some diversity of opinion. So I want to make it clear that it's okay. You know, it's okay to have different curriculum. And I'm not here to say, well, hey, unless you use CLE and only CLE, you're making a mistake. That's not my goal. So there is no perfect curriculum. There is no perfect standard that you need to go by. And I want to also make clear that the curriculum is only a part of the package. If you have good teachers, you can have some poor curriculum, some poor textbooks. But if you have some good teachers, that goes a long way. If you have less than ideal curriculum and maybe some less than ideal teachers, but you have a parent, so you have the church support, that can go a long way. But so, curriculum is a tool. Curriculum is something that we're going to use to get from point A to point B, to get the students from not knowing how to read to be able to graduate, to be able to leave our schools with being able to function in life. So if we fail, should we blame the curriculum? I think there's some things we need to consider. If the results, if what we're seeing in our schools is not what we want to see, then hey, let's look at the curriculum that we're using. So how do we decide what curriculum's best? How do we decide which curriculum to use? The simple answer is go to your, like Jonathan was saying yesterday, go to your school handbook, go to your school's statement or whatever you have. This is what we're going to use. You know, and that's where our talk could end today. You know, just go to your handbook and see what it says and you're done. But the reality is life changes. We have different teachers. We have different situations. We have different pupils. We have things we run into that we didn't have before. So it's important. It's valuable to look at it. And for us, in our school, sometimes we want to change our standard. We need to rewrite what our goals are. And I think it's important to consider, to evaluate, whenever a child leaves our school, whenever a young person leaves our school, what should that look like? What should they be able to do? What is the minimum standard? What is the goal that we have? Is it to pass some test? If they get 100% on some test, is that good enough? What is their standard? So, just out of curiosity, now I'm not going to remember all this, but are most of you on the board? Everybody on the board? Good. Any teachers? Any parents? I mean, that are... good, I'm glad. That's good. I'm glad to see as far as the people that are on the board. But as a board, we're responsible to give oversight. We're responsible to give direction, to say this is what's going to happen. This is the change that we need this is the change that needs to take place. And in a sense, we're the ones that are accountable. Whenever the parents, the church, whatever says, hey, we heard, we saw this and so, they're going to come to us as a board and say, hey, look, you need to change this. You need to fix this. So maybe some of you taught, some of you are familiar with that, but the teachers are the ones that are in the day-to-day grind. They're the ones that are out there making it happen, out there hammering it out. You know, okay, so as a board, we sit down, we have this board decision and say, okay, hey, we're going to make this change, and now we're going to use this curriculum instead of that curriculum. The teacher's like, okay. You know, and I think we need to be in touch with that. You know, if we're going to say, let's make this change, we need to make sure that the teachers are on board with this. But as parents, I think we're in the driver's seat in this question, this issue of looking at curriculum and what to use. Because as parents, we need to be valuable. I think it's valuable for us as parents to be looking at what their children are coming home with and saying, hey, where is the Christian history? Where is the Anabaptist history? Where is the whatever in our school? Why, you know, where is this covered? I think it's valuable. All right, so how do we make these curriculum choices? What are some guiding principles? Is it good enough to say, hey, this is what we've always done? In our school, this is what we've always done. Is it okay to say, well, I like what Rodenstaff publishes. They've done well in the past. If Rodenstaff doesn't publish it, we don't need it. Is that an okay attitude to have? I don't think so. Is it okay to say, well, this is what they used up in Oregon, so therefore, hey, it works for them, it should work for us, so let's implement it. Is it good enough to say, well, this curriculum is kind of expensive. You know, it's going to cost us X amount of dollars to be doing this every year. I think that some of that needs to be taken into consideration, but is the finances the number one goal? Is that how we decide? So in my opinion, there's three areas that we need to think about whenever we're making curriculum decisions. Number one is it's a spiritual decision. In other words, is the curriculum that we're using, is it going to have a focus on God? Is it God-centered? In other words, is there biblical truth that's coming out that's being embodied, lived out in the characters or whatever that's being taught? Does it approach the New Testament teachings from a Christian perspective? And specifically on the Sermon on the Mount, How does it teach? How does it portray these things? So if I have a curriculum, and this is a great curriculum, hey, you know, XYZ school used this, and hey, all their students are passing, and it's a great, but there's a subtleties there where we don't, this, the kingdom of God isn't emphasized. I think that's something for us to consider. The second thing is the character. You know, as far as character of our students, I think that's something for us to evaluate. How do our children, from the things that are being taught in the curriculum, how do our children learn how to relate to other people, how to relate to disappointments, how to relate to real life? Is the curriculum teaching the children how to learn? And then the third one is academics, and this is the easy one. I mean, you know, is the job getting done? Is learning happening? So if we're using a curriculum as a board, okay, we sit down with the teachers, and okay, you know, at the end of the year, and look at some achievement test results maybe, or some scores, report cards, whatever you use. And hey, it's just not, everybody's getting C's and D's. You know, as a board, we can say, hey, look, something needs to change here. This isn't okay. So how do we check some of that? Well, like I said, the achievement test, if you use the achievement test or some kind of scoring, that can be an easy way to check it. You know, is the achievement test scores what they should be? Or other tests we would give. And as far as character, you know, what do we do with the attitude, a prevalent attitude coming out of our schools, if the school, of having a lazy or undisciplined attitude, or a disrespectful attitude? You know, maybe that's coming, maybe some of that's the teacher, maybe some of that's some other influences, but maybe it's coming from the curriculum too. Or what do we do with the arrogance of ignorance? What do we do with character deficiencies? And then the third test there, the test of the spiritual consequences. What's coming out of the spiritual test? In Judges chapter 2, it talks about the people of Israel. They got to the place after Joshua died where they forgot God. And I think that would be a sad indicator. That's a sad commentary on a people. Whenever they're in a situation where they're teaching whatever was taking place, got to the place where the students, the young people, the people coming on, forgot who God was. Now we can say, well, does that affect our curriculum? Does that affect our schools? And I think it does. Are you all familiar with CASB, Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute? I would, if you have an opportunity to go, I'd recommend it. Here's a quote that somebody said at CASB. We have now raised a generation of Protestants as it pertains to core values pertaining to church and state, speaking of using curriculum from a non-Anabaptist publisher. I think that's interesting. Raising a generation as Anabaptist people, as people that are concerned about an Anabaptist, an obedient lifestyle, raising a generation of Protestants. You know, I think that at least we ought to say, hey, what's going on here? My dad was telling me that there's some Amish schools that intentionally use secular curriculum because they don't want to have too much Bible, their children to be exposed to too much Bible. Now, I disagree with the idea. I think that's wrong. But I like the idea of a thought-out response. Here's what we want. Here's what we're going to do. I'd like to see, well, you know, we're going to use a certain curriculum because of the Bible content. So it's our responsibility, part of our responsibility, as a board, to balance between ignorance and naivety and educational excellence. We have educational excellence and we have ignorance on one side, and it's our responsibility as a board to bring a balance between there. It's easy, hey, the more the better. Hey, this is producing what we want, let's get more, you know? Hey, that's okay, but let's keep in balance, you know, what our final goal is. The final goal isn't just to have some super smart children graduating from our class and from our schools. It's to have godly young people. People that can say, here's an issue, here's what's right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get into this more later. So it's part of our responsibility as a board to provide leadership, to give direction, to those responsible to the number one, to God. You know, as a school board, I think that's part of our responsibility, to recognize our God-given responsibility. We need to make decisions. And to the parents, to the teachers, to the church, those people we're responsible to. Okay, so in evaluating different curriculums, there are some differences in the way curriculum's written, the way it's done. There's more, but I want to look at two of them. And there's the traditional method of teaching. And that's where you have, and this is what's commonly used, where you have, it's characterized by memorization, tests, lecture, seat work. You have independent studies, you have math, you have English, you have spelling. Okay, that's more of a traditional way of educating. A quote here: the chief business of traditional education is to transmit to the next generation those skills, facts, and standards of moral and social conduct that adults consider to be necessary for the next generation's material and social success. In other words, we're looking at what, we're taking a snapshot, okay, this is what we think is important for the next generation, and it's like, okay, here, this is what you need to learn, memorize it. And at the end, we're going to give you a test and we'll see how well you know it. So the objective of this is high test scores. Okay, if you're getting the good grades on XYZ subject, hey, you're learning it, you're knowing it. If you're getting good grades, graduation, those are things that are part of this. And so correct knowledge is paramount. That's what we want, correct knowledge. Okay, so think of like a rod and staff math book. You have a whole page of math facts. Okay, if you miss one of them, you don't have all the correct knowledge. So you only have a 99%. You have a 90%. You didn't get them all right. Okay, that's a traditional way of, that's okay. I think that's okay. And there's several reasons for that. One of them is it's easy for the teacher. You know, we can, the school board, as a school board, we can say, okay, teacher, how's it going? He can say, okay, here's our achievement test results. Here's our test scores. Here's the report cards. And so he can see what he's getting done, and it's easy to verify it. And life is short. You know, we don't have time to go and through and figure it all out. And so to take an idea, this is a life skill, this is what you're going to need, memorize it, this is what you're going to, you know, and we're going to give a test on it, that's easy, and I think that's appropriate. And then to have some objectives. Okay, this is what we want our children to learn. We're going to encapsulate it. We're going to put it in writing, put it in a curriculum, and they're going to learn it. I think that's okay. The other approach to education is more of a classical teaching. Is classical. It's a more of a broad-based approach to education, and it tends to be more teacher-intensive in guiding the learning experience. And children, instead of being grouped by age, they're grouped by more of an interest or ability. It's characterized by hands-on activities, group activities, student-led discovery. And the objective is learning, retention, accumulating life skills, and critical thinking is paramount. You know, being able to think through issues is important. An example of that would be like the literature series and what CLE has. You know, as you're doing those stories and you're evaluating, and the student's evaluating those questions, okay, the author says this, the story says this. Okay, is number one, number two, number A, B, C, or D correct? And we have a class discussion and we're talking about this. And the student says, well, I think A is right. And here's why I think A is right. And the teacher says, well, actually, the teacher's book, the answer key says C is right. But I'll give you credit for A because you had a good explanation for it. You see what's happening there. Now it's not so much, okay, unless you have C, you're wrong. No, if you can say, okay, this is how I got here, this is the reasons, then I can accept that. Now, I don't, you know, I think that's okay. That's an okay approach to teaching it. And I think we use this method of teaching. You know, we take our schools on field trips and on events like that, you know, where there's like a group. Everybody's together in this, and we're going to go tour the cheese factory, and we're going to see how they make the candy, or whatever. You know, it's everybody's together. We're going through this together. You know, or the teacher, we're going to put up airplanes, and we're going to study how an airplane works all year long. And so the teacher's all interested in the airfoil, and he's teaching, and he talks about jet propulsion, and he's talking about fin, blade fin, whatever, you know, how the angle and all that, and flying and all that. And it's, you know, he does this regular stuff and all this, you know, the regular teaching, but this is all part of it, you know. And so the students are learning how airplanes fly, and it's fun for them. I think that's appropriate. Maybe Jonathan's here, so you know that. I think that example that Ray Fesquith talks about in Teach Like Your Hair's on Fire, the financial system, are y'all familiar with that? I think that's a classical example of this. I didn't see too many heads nod, so I'll explain it a little bit. I think this is just great. So in my dad uses this after we talked about it, and he thought it's pretty complicated, but so basically you set up the classroom like real life. So and what it is you get paid to do your schoolwork, and it's all fake money, so it's not actual dollars. So you get you can modify this as you want, but you get paid to do your schoolwork. So you get 100%, you get $100, say, or whatever. So you know in your grades or whatever, and so you have this income coming in, and then you have to live somewhere. So your desk is you have to pay to live in your desk, and so you have to pay rent. You start out the year paying rent. Well, then the desk is for sale. And so you can buy the desk. Now you don't have to pay rent. And so the desks that are highly favored, the spots that are great, you know, that you want to sit, maybe it's in the back, so by the door, or maybe it's in the front by the teacher's desk, those are more expensive. You're going to pay more for those. So you have sources of income and you have sources of expenses. My dad has this where he has these fees. So he has taxes and he has other utilities and you have to pay these fees. And it's a great system for the teacher to say, okay, you lay work, $50. You didn't come in class when class was starting late, whatever. Here's a fee for that. And so it takes out some of the punishment. And then, it deals with some of the punishment. And then at the end of the school year, you have this auction, you know, and then you can buy the stuff, but you only can use this money. And whoever ends up with the most money is the one that can buy the most stuff. And in Ray Fesquith's book, you have some pretty sought after stuff that's there. And you're working all year to save your money. And some of the students, it's fascinating. Some of the students get pretty creative. And there was, you have all these expenses, and so there's and fees and fines and all that the teacher can levy. This one student, you know, took it and he said, you know what, I'm gonna sell all my fellow students insurance, and I'll pay their fees, and you pay me your insurance. Now whether you promote that idea or not, but I like that idea, that creativity, the creative idea. Where he's saying, here's a problem, I'll provide a solution. Okay, all this fits under the classical education model, you know, and I think it's just a great example of that. All right. So read Ray Fesquith's book or talk to Jonathan if you want to know more about how that works. So I'm moving on to some particulars of publishers that we use. What do y'all use? As far as publishers, let's talk about this. Who do you use for your curriculum? CLE. All right, number one, good deal.
Rod and Staff,
good deal. All right, anyone, any more?
Rebecca?
Any more?
We'll use some Saxon.
Very good. Any more?
EMP has
EMP
Bible and the Beginning Steps to Read, BSR.
Yeah. Very good. Any more? Now, what is interesting here, and I'll talk about this more later. These three here are full-line curriculum. In other words, you can go to Rebecca, you can go to Rod Staff, you can go to CLE, and you can get everything you need for the whole school, for the whole year, for everything. Saxon, EMP, and there's Pathway, there's Apologia, the Foundational Math, there's all those others that would be just partly. In other words, in our school, we use Saxon only in the upper grades, only in 10th grade. EMP has a great reading program, but it's only in the lower grades. Pathway has a curriculum, but it's only in the reading. Apologia has an excellent science, but it's only science. Okay, so these up here are the ones that are, you can get everything there. Okay, now we could divide all the curriculum providers into some other categories. Now, there's more up here that y'all didn't mention, but there's some other curriculum providers. There's Bob Jones. Let's see. There's ACE. There's more. So we could divide these into some categories. We talked about that some already. But there's Christian providers. There's Christian publishers versus a secular publisher. Rebecca, Bob Jones would be a secular publisher. There's Anabaptist publishers compared to fundamental Christian publishers. There again, CLE and Rod Staff would be a Anabaptist publisher. ACE would be a... I think that's right. Is that right? It would be more of a Christian, a fundamental Christian publisher?
I would have said that maybe all of them, all the others would be somewhat fundamentally Christian.
Okay, all right.
We get the point.
Very good. Okay, and then further, there is there's the mastery method of teaching and then the spiral method. And Jonathan talked about this some yesterday in his class. CLE would use more of a spiral method. Rod and staff would use more of a mastery. And we'll talk about this a little more. There is a teacher-taught classroom way of teaching, and there's the independent study, individualized way of teaching. I don't know that when you talk about some of those are okay as a board, as teachers, you decide this is what we're going to do. No big deal. It's not a big issue. Some of them are important. But here again, I'd like to say that we need to evaluate our objectives and how we deciding which curriculum to use. We might be able to use a secular curriculum, but it's going to be teacher intensive to bring in the Christian perspective that needs to be taught. And in our school, we do that. One of the requirements that we have is we have to teach California history. We're in California, teach California history. Well, Rod and Staff doesn't publish a California history book. CLE doesn't publish a California history book. So we have to get a secular publisher to get the California the history book. On a side note, where's the requirement in our school that we have to have a Bible? But anyway, Bible or history or whatever requirement. So we have to, there's the secular and there's the Christian. WFTI did great as far as giving advance notice, as far as, hey, would you talk about this? And so I had some opportunity to prepare. And I was at this convention and I was walking around talking to these other vendors. Hey, I didn't tell them exactly, but I'm going to have this talk about different curriculum. So tell me about your curriculum. What do you have? Why should I be buying your curriculum? So I was talking to this ACE rep, and he was going over all this stuff and why his ACE was so good, and it was impressive what he had to offer. And one of the things that was interesting was in every lesson, in every grade, every lesson, every subject, there's a Bible verse, a memory verse or whatever. Well, Rod Staff doesn't have that, and I don't think CLE has that. Every lesson, every page, every whatever, there's a Bible verse. And that was a kind of a selling point. Hey, this is a Bible-intensive curriculum. The danger of that, as I see it, is that there's a potential, what is the student going to do? He's going to look over that and skip the Bible verse because he's getting his work done. He's going to hurry so he can get all the stuff done. And basically what it's doing is it's knocking, yeah, the Bible's there, but it's knocking it out. It's saying it's irrelevant. Well, that's not the idea. That's not what we want. That's not the attitude that we want to promote in our schools. Just skip the Bible verses, forget about that, get on to the more important stuff. So my personal opinion is I think we ought to give a preference, an automatic preference, whenever we're deciding what curriculum to use. Now here again, I'm not criticizing, I'm not knocking anybody that uses, because we do it ourselves, we use some of these other curriculum providers. I think we ought to give a preference to Anabaptist publishers that have an Anabaptist perspective, a viewpoint. Because they have a philosophy of teaching, a philosophy of of what they're after, what their goal is, and I think that's something that we need to consider. So, if we say, okay, well, it's either CLD or Rod the Staff, that's what we need to, that's what our goal is. Maybe you've run into this, maybe you've heard of this, well, hey, it's, an Adventist provider, that's somehow they're substandard. Somehow they, we have to go to a secular publisher to get a better program. I don't know, maybe you've heard some of that, but I think there's a problem with that. There again, it goes back to that balance. You know, is the educational excellence, is that our number one goal? Is it having people that are dedicated for the kingdom of God? Okay, moving on. That we talked about some of this that mastery or a spiral learning way of learning. There again, Jonathan had an excellent demonstration of this yesterday. So, a mastery level. If you're not familiar with this, here's where we want us. Here's where the student comes in at, and here's where our goal is. So, at the mastery level, we have lessons, we have parts, we have the whole thing is geared incrementally to get from here all the way up to here, and then we at the end we have a review, we have a test, and we're done. Now we're ready to move on. So we studied adjectives, we studied adverbs, okay, now we're ready to study when we go on. The same thing is true in the math, okay, we studied addition, we studied subtraction, okay, now we're ready to move on to some of the other things. Okay, that's one way of doing it. The other way that CLE has is, and you're familiar with this, Jonathan was explaining it, is the spiral method. In this method here, review is incidental, is just partly. There's not a whole lot of review. There is review at the end. But in this one, in the spiral method, there is review continuously. So there's a few new concepts at the beginning of the lesson, and then the rest of the lesson is all review. So you're teaching math, and you have maybe a new concept that's teaching in, but then in this math lesson, you'll have time, you'll have money, you'll have some fractions, you'll have all kinds of stuff. So which is better? In my opinion, how are you going to answer that question, which is better? One of them is that you're going to look at your teacher and say, hey, how do you think about this? Maybe a teacher's going to say, well, you know what? I really don't care for all this mix up. I mean, we're studying money, and we're studying time, and we're studying fractions, and we're studying all kinds of stuff all at the same time. And that just bugs me. I'd rather just stick with, We're studying fractions. We're studying time. Okay, see, as a board, we're going to say, okay, how do you feel about this? Because if we say, teacher, I want you to study, we have CLE, CLE's rep coming around, and we have this great support, so we're going to teach CLE, and the teacher doesn't like it. Well, we need to take it into consideration. Another way we could say which is right is to go to look at the achievement test results. And Alan Troyer, if you go to the CAT testing and what he's done there, and Alan Troyer's, he's categorized it, and it's very interesting. So he has all these schools, and he keeps track of it. Okay, this school and these number of students used Rod the Staff. These number of schools used Abeka. These used a CLE. And how do they test on the achievement test? So whenever you're looking at academics, you can say, okay, well, if you use a CLE, how does it compare? And it's, Rod the Staff is known for its excellent English program. So let's look at how the schools that used Rod the Staff English compared to schools that used CLE. You look at that thing, and it's fascinating. If you want to see it, I can show it to you. But Rod the Staff might have a great program, and I think they do. But CLEs, and you look at those test results, CLEs is just as good. So when you look at those achievement test results, which is better? They're both the same. It's just one way of doing it compared to another. It's not like, hey, CLEs is the best. It's the only way you can do it. No, it's not that way. So, and then moving on, the teacher taught classroom versus independent study. And I don't know how you all do that. But there again, that's something that as a board we need to think about, which is better. And in our school, we do kind of a combination. Because in the lower grades, you have to have a teacher with first grade teaching them how to learn to read, teaching them, the math facts and helping them do their papers. And if you use EMP for the lower grade reading, I mean, that's very teacher intensive, and it's okay. But whenever you get to the upper grades, there again, you need some teacher involvement, but it can be minimized. One of the goals that I believe as a teacher needs to be that you work yourself out of a job. A student needs to get to the place where they can learn on their own. They can take a book and study it and pass the test if that's what you're doing. And so the teacher involvement doesn't have to be as intense there. So for us, that's what we've done. Okay, in the lower levels, there's teacher involvement. There's going to be class every day. In the upper grades, hey, you come one day a week or whatever you're going to do. That's what we do. Get your lessons. We'll talk about problems. We'll go over some of the things you're going to learn and go from there. So it's not necessarily that an individualized study is wrong. It's not. It's less than ideal unless you do it that way. You know, if you do it that way, you're wrong. That's not the way it is. Or that classroom is the only right way to do that. So, in looking over these briefly, what would you do if there is something that you need to study? You want to, as a board, you say, hey, this is something that's important. We want our children to learn, but you can't go to CLE and get it, like our California history. Where do we go for that? Jonathan had this neat story. I think it's just fascinating. I think it's wonderful. Back east in the Washington Franklin schools, they had this concern that the curriculum that they were using had less than an ideal Anabaptist perspective to it. So they said, okay, we're going to try something else. We need to make a change. We don't like the results we're getting. Excellent from a board perspective, and it's an excellent thing to have happen. Evaluating the curriculum and saying something needs to change. So they said, okay, well, let's figure out what our options are. So let's check out CLE. Let's check out Rod and staff. We're in line with what they have. So they chose to go with Rod and staff. And it didn't fly. The teachers didn't like it for whatever reason. They might have had some personal opinions. They looked at the achievement test results, and they were going down. So something needed to change. Something needed to happen. So they said, let's write our own curriculum. I think that's just pretty good. So that's what they did. They wrote their own curriculum. And I think that's what you use in your school, right? That math, that foundational math? I just think that's just excellent. So they not only blessed them, I mean, they not only took care of the problem in their own schools, but it's something that the rest of us can benefit from. You can call them and, hey, I need some of that foundational math. And what's interesting is they took a different approach, and they more approached the teaching math from a traditional method, and they more approached it from a classical method of teaching it. And basically, it's teaching the process. Is that right? The process of teaching math compared to the concept. So you're studying an area of a circle. They took the process of how you figure out the area of a circle and said, this is how you do it. You go do it. Whereas the traditional would be, okay, here's how you do it. Here's the concept. Okay, you do this little formula, and then you apply it. Now, here's a lesson of all these circles you find the formula for. They just said, here, go do it. And it's an interesting way of approaching it. And they did some research and said this is a great way to do it. So that's why they did it. And it works. My point is, we need more of that. We need more people. We need more schools that says, hey, what we're using here isn't cutting it. There's a school now. My exposure is rather limited. There's a school back in Pennsylvania that says, "Hey, we don't like the science that's available." So they're writing their own science program. You know, it's an excellent Anabaptist perspective of science. There's a school in Texas that says, "Hey, we need a Christian history curriculum." So that from the time of Christ to the present day, they have a curriculum that covers the Christian history. Excellent. I think that's just great. So I think personally we could use more than that. You know, when you think of a buffet, that's great. But if you have a buffet, if my wife and I went to the restaurant and you walk in and there's only two or three main dishes and you have a few toppings, would we say, hey, this is great, let's come back? Well, maybe not. You know, my point is, this is what they have, what we have is great, but let's expand, let's get more. So what does your school need? What should a student leaving your school look like? This is an issue that we've talked about some in our schools. What is the goal? Where are we headed? This is something that's interests me. And one of those areas is in particular is in our Bible. As Anabaptist people, as Christian, as we teach our children because we have a concern for their spiritual welfare, there's a reason we're not sending them to a secular school. So if Bible is not a required subject, is that okay with us? If Bible is a subject that's minimized, if we get everything else done, then we'll do Bible. Or we don't have a very good program for Bible. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Ray Vanderlyn. He goes over to Israel and he does this study with and he connects Bible scenes with the Bible stories, and it's what he has is just interesting, very fascinating. It's a great teaching program. But one of the things, he was walking down the street one day, and he comes to the intersection, he's waiting to cross this street, and here's a bunch of school students there waiting to cross the street as well. Well, what do school students talk about on their way on the street when they're going from point A to point B? So he's listening to what they're talking about. They're studying their Bible memory. You know, I just think that's pretty good. That's what their interest is. That's what their level is. In my opinion, that's the ideal. You know, whenever our children are outside, they're not in school, but they're working on their Bible memory. In that Jewish setting there, they have a pretty intensive teaching program. And so it's almost like they require their students to have almost like a concordance mind. Okay, where is this word used and how is it used in the Bible? Where do you find that? You know, and the students are supposed to be right there. They're supposed to have that. You know, maybe we could do a little better in some of that. Now, I don't tend to lift up the Jews as, hey, this is something that they have and we ought to have. No, I'm not necessarily saying that. But maybe to stimulate our thinking, maybe this is something that we could use a little more of. All right. What are your thoughts? Any questions that you have? Anything that you want to expand on, or maybe we should cover more?
Some question I have is, you mentioned how a teacher likes or dislikes the curriculum. How much? I have one teacher one year that likes this curriculum, another teacher another year likes this curriculum. How do we balance
it? That's a good question. So how do you balance it? And there again, if you have a teacher teach a number of years, that's maybe you have some momentum set up. And I think that's where maybe you need, as a board, and this is my personal opinion, to say, hey, we might make the change, but it's going to be slowly. In other words, if we're going to teach this curriculum, you know, hey, teacher, I want you to be here for a while. And the other thing, in my opinion, is that there's a reason why we choose this curriculum. You know, it's not just because Mr. Miller liked it, so therefore that's why we have it, so Mr. Weaver decided he didn't like it, so therefore we're going to change. No, we're not quite that fickle. I think there's more than that. Now, that's if the teacher says, hey, this is what I like, this is what I want to teach, and you know, you can tell this is going to be more than just a one-year commitment for him, well, then that's something to consider. Maybe you have more on that. That's right. That's right. That's right. We need to be careful. We can't change, be real fickle. That's right. Very good. Any more?
I visited a school this spring, and in the spring, I like to ask first grade teachers, did your child learn to read, or did your children learn to read? First graders learn to read. And this teacher said, no. And I said it in a way that was kind of like, well, there's more here. I said, what's happening? She said, I don't know. I said, well, let's take a look. And she got three different reading curriculums. And laid them on the desk and said, this is what I'm using this year. And I said, well, how do you decide what you're going to use? She said, well, just whatever the children need. She would have been much better. Where was the boy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She would have been much better if she had one thing and stuck to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is the ultimate tragedy, I think, as far as academics, is that first graders not learning how to read.
That's right. That's right.
I think that can play out though in the order. we discovered here not so long ago that because we were using curriculum from multiple sources, we were doubling up on some areas of history and totally skipping others mm-hmm. that everybody assumed that mm-hmm. was part of our history, mm-hmm. rapid fire, but it indeed wasn't. Because we were using multiple sources of curriculum for mm-hmm. our history.
And that's a good point. Just being able, for the board, for us as a board, to be involved and knowing what's happening. Very good. So that was the double bell. I guess that means we're supposed to end. Any more real quick? Very good. Well, I appreciate everybody's attention and contribution. Thank you.